I would now like to introduce our speaker, Mr. B. Cato Mayberry, who's going to speak to us this morning.
Good morning, church family. I have I'm experiencing several mixed feelings here this morning. I am nervous, and I'm also very anxious to share, and my experience here thus far has been so welcoming, and I wanted to share with everyone several different things. And before getting into a particular message, I want to ask that we all send prayer out for my president and CEO. That's Miss Donna Jones Baker. You know how oftentimes you can see folks and assume that they are just so fit and healthy, and you can always know that when you get there in the morning or when we leave, she and I are usually first ones in, last one out, that you'll see them tomorrow. At this point, I have not heard my president's voice in over 2 weeks, and it rocks my world as much as I would not look forward to our weekly or, you know, scheduled meetings to talk about the state of the organization. But there is so much more to our friends, family, and colleagues than any of us could ever imagine. So with that, I want to encourage everyone to live in the moment. Always appreciate who you have in front of you, because you never know. And as I stand here, it makes me think about so many family and friends that have passed on over the years. So I would also want to send out praise to those individuals, because you just never know. And I have the nerve to stand before you and feel like, before people move on, mature, or whatever you want to call that transition, that they should tell me that they're on their way out and give me a moment to have my last words. So with that, I hang on, always making it a point to make for certain that folks know how I feel about them in the moment. Normally at this time, I would be at my church. The name of it is Transforming Ministries. I'm so blessed that Reverend Jerome Stevenson, who just happens to be my brother-in-law, and in this reference is the only time that I make reference to him as a brother-in-law. He is my brother, and he's been a member of my family now for about 30 years. And I've seen Reverend Stevenson Jerome, my brother, move through life, getting to the point where he is today. And I credit one of my wonderful big sisters, his wife, for so much of his transition. When I look at the two of them, I always say she's the better person, but she is moving him in the right direction. We have at our church, there's our mission statement that I will share with you. And it just says that each of us, in the name of Christ, are asked to extend ourselves to the greater community for the good. I think earlier she mentioned about through our goodness, all the boats can float. And so I embrace that. No one will ever get out of this world alive. Resolve, therefore, in your life to maintain some sense of value. Take care of yourself. Good health is everyone's major source of wealth. Without it, happiness is almost impossible. Resolve to be cheerful and helpful. People will repay you in kind. Avoid angry, abrasive persons. They are generally vengeful. Avoid zealots. They are generally humorless. Resolve to listen more and talk less. No one ever learns anything by talking. Be cautious of giving advice. Wise folks don't need it. Fools won't heed it. Resolve to be tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant with the weak and wrong. Sometime in life, you will have been all of these. do not equate money with success. There are many successful moneymakers who are miserable, miserable failures as human beings. What counts most about success is how a person achieves it. Resolve to love tomorrow someone you didn't love today. Love is the most enriching ingredient of life. In preparing to meet my new friends and family here today, I called on my brother-in-law last evening because this is my first experience at a church such as this one. And I asked him, I said, so what exactly, where am I going? What would be appropriate to say and to share? And my brother advised me on Romans 12, the living sacrifice. And I'm going to assume, for even though many of you have been here for many years, if your experience has been like mine, you've had lots of religious affiliations, you know, finding our way. But his reference was Romans 12, the living sacrifice. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship, etc., 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 all the way down to do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's the essence that I drew on that early this morning. There are so many commonalities between us all and parallels in our life that there is one biography that I would like to share with you. It's the biography of Malcolm X. A question that we should all raise ourselves is, what do we know about Malcolm X and his journey? Most of us only have very, very sound bites of who he was, what he experienced, and his journey and transformation. I'd like to share that, if you'll indulge me, this morning. Malcolm X was born Malcolm Little, if you didn't know, on May the 19th, 1925, faraway place, Omaha, Nebraska. His mother, Louise Norton Little, was a homemaker occupied with a family of eight. We typically only know about Malcolm. I didn't realize myself until this morning that Malcolm had eight siblings. His father, Earl Little, was an unspoken Baptist minister. I didn't know that. I don't know if you guys did, because that's not how most of us know Malcolm X. But yes, his father was a Baptist minister and an avid supporter of black nationalist leader Marcus Garvey. Earl's civil rights activism prompted death threats from white supremacist organizations, black legions, forcing the family to relocate on two occasions before Malcolm was even 4 years old. Regardless of Little's efforts to elude the legion in 1929, their Lansing home was burned to the ground. 2 years later, Earl's body was found lying, Earl being the dad's body, was found lying across the town's trolley tracks. Police ruled it was an incident and that it was an accident. Though Malcolm X, formerly Malcolm Little, intelligent and articulate, at some point in his journey was arrested, and he was charged or sentenced for 10 years, for which he did seven. It's during that incarceration that he spent a tremendous amount of time doing what he favored, which is reading. Malcolm's faith was dealt a crushing blow, because we all know that at some point in time that he had a very strong affiliation with the Nation of Islam. And Malcolm was largely credited with increasing the membership from a small number of 500 in 1952 to over 30,000 in 1963. Malcolm's faith was dealt with a crushing blow at the height of his civil rights movement in 1963. Why? Because he learned that Elijah Muhammad was not as faithful as he had believed him to be. For Malcolm X, that was rocking his world. Now, when I'm sharing this story with my children, I said, don't vest in the man, don't vest in the woman or the person before you. Oftentimes, the message is better than the messenger. Seek the good out of it is what we should focus on. Well, again, it rocked Malcolm's world to find that Elijah Muhammad had not been all that he had thought him to be. Since joining the Nation of Islam, Malcolm had strictly adhered to the teachings of Muhammad, which included remaining celibate until he married Betty Shabazz in 1958. Now, there are some parallels where I'm going with this story. In March of 1964, Malcolm terminated his relationship with the Nation of Islam, unable to look past Muhammad's deceptions. And the same year, Malcolm went on to a pilgrimage at the Mecca, which provided to be a life-altering for him. For the first time, Malcolm shared his thoughts and beliefs with different cultures and found the response to be overwhelmingly positive. When he returned, Malcolm said he had met blonde-haired, blue-eyed men and women that he could call brothers and sisters. He returned to the United States with a new outlook on integration, a new hope for the future. This time when Malcolm spoke, instead of just preaching to African Americans, he had a message for all races. He had a message for everyone. After repeated attempts on his life, Malcolm rarely traveled anymore without bodyguards. On February the 14th, 1965, the home where Malcolm and Betty and their four daughters lived in East Elmhurst, New York, was firebombed. Luckily, the family got out without any physical injuries. 1 week later, however, Malcolm's enemies were successful in their ruthless attempt at a speaking engagement in New York. Three gunmen rushed Malcolm, shot him 15 times at close range, and the 39-year-old fell dead. 1,500 people attended Malcolm's funeral in Harlem on February the 27th. About a few months later, Betty bore their additional two kids, their twin daughters. And I just think it's such a tragedy when you deal with people trying to follow their lives, trying to follow their message, and making attempts to give back and experience such difficult periods. Parallels. I thought it was amazing for the two young folks that, coming of age, yeah, the adult passage. If I were to have closed my eyes and listened to the first young lady, I would have thought it was my own granddaughter standing before me. I mean, they sound unbelievably alike. So I was very, very moved with that, and I want to thank you all for giving me that opportunity to share. Parallels. There's also parallels between the gathering of the Northern Hills and the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio. This morning early, I said, I need to know more about the church before coming here and having this experience. Now, when I was asked to submit my bio and a photo of myself and my bio, I included in that email, would you please give me a call so that I would have an opportunity to know more about this congregation. That didn't happen. So I was like, okay, Cato, just be faithful, step out on it, and and move through it. And so I did. So I was like, okay, well, you need to find out what your travel time is. I live in Dayton, and I've been commuting to the Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio now for 4 years, anywhere between 5 to 6 days a week. Folks say, are you going to move to Cincinnati? Cincinnati's wonderful, but I love me some Dayton, Ohio, so I just keep right on driving. Well, anyway, when I ask Siri, I have an iPhone, when I ask Siri, of course, Siri knows everything, including when and what time Mona Lisa was born. It told me that this location was 1,197 miles away. But the good from that is I then went online and took a deep dive so that I could know more about the church, more about the location, more about the reverend, and everything else that I thought that I would need to know to be prepared to meet my new friends and family. So in that deep dive, I realized that the church, this particular church, had a church merger, very similar to in 2013, the Urban League of Greater Cincinnati and the Urban League of Dayton merged. I also did a head count on the number of pastoral leaders that you've had here, and I believe that it is about the same as the number of presidents and CEOs that the Urban League has had. One big difference is the Urban League is currently 69 years, this particular affiliate is 69 years old, and the majority of our presidents and CEOs have held their posts for anywhere from 12 to as much as 18 years. But again, the parallel is there. The mission of the gathering here at Northern Hills is very similar because it's to address the needs of those individuals that need a new promise, need their spirits and their faith renewed, need a second chance, need a family, they need uplift, and that happens to be what we do as well. Now, ours is about programs that help folks to become gainfully employed. Our advocacy is to make it clear to the larger community that the folks that we serve, one, you don't have to be an African-American if you didn't know. We service those individuals who are economically disadvantaged. It has been shared with you that our mission is to transform generations by promoting personal empowerment and economic self-sufficiency. While that's a mouthful, the impact and the beauty of the work that we do aligns itself again with the mission of this church. And I found that to be very, very interesting. We do work programs. We do advocacy. We give voice to those individuals that need a voice. We give promise of tomorrow by empowering our participants, giving them the skill sets that they need to be able to join tomorrow's workforce. That is what we do. There is also other things that you don't associate with the Urban League. We have a program called the Young Professionals. Young professionals, there was a time that I could have been one, but that too passed maybe 25 plus years ago because the range on it is from 18 to 40. So somehow I missed it, but life goes on. We also have a program referred to as Urban Leaders. Urban Leaders takes a deep dive on developing tomorrow's leadership in the folks that come through our programs. Majority of them are sponsored by their employers to move through the program. It's a 10-month program, and the impact that it has is just remarkable, how it moves folks. And it's the old saying, you know, teach one to reach one, or reach one to teach one, or teach me to fish and I can eat for a lifetime. That is our best practice. Our programs include workforce development and training, youth development. We have after-school programs to provide mentor, to provide structure to the elementary age children. We, on an ongoing basis, promote inclusiveness. We develop public policy and advocacy, again, for those persons that need a voice. There happens to be a total of 88 affiliates nationwide, and in your own backyard, you happen to have one of the highest performing, largest urban leagues in the nation. We have for so many years now received a 5 rating out of a possible 5. That means that we are financially sound, program sound, good practices and the number of folks' lives that we touch are all on point. I want to thank you all for this opportunity to speak with you today, and should you have any questions, I am open. Thank you. Stay for the question. Okay.
We have about 7 or 8 minutes for comments and questions. So.
Thank you very much for your talk. I appreciate it. It made me remember one of my favorite stories about Malcolm X was when he was asked to reflect on Black history, and very succinctly he said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, my brothers and sisters. Plymouth Rock landed on us. And I think that, and I couldn't help but reflect on that, given what Kanye said this week about slavery being a choice. And I'd like to hear some of your reflections on that.
I don't know. Actually, we all mature over time. His time's not up. Malcolm certainly at age 38 had a wake-up call and realized that the world was bigger than the lessons that he received through Elijah Muhammad. I am personally one that just never gives up, the eternal optimist.
Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I have a personal connection, and I'm very deeply grateful for the Urban League. My two grandchildren are happily working in the backyard on the hygiene kits. My son-in-law went through addiction and prison and received services and training from you all. He's now has his own company and employs others and makes a big difference in the others who other people who are in recovery. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not going to be hard on you like Tom was. Recently I read in the newspaper that the city of Cincinnati is out of the running for the new Amazon. Is it Amazon? Okay. And the reason that was stated in the rebuff that we received as a city was lack of technology people familiar with technology, and they just felt there was not the pool here. So I was wondering if the Urban League has programs geared in that direction or if you have plans to do so.
There is definitely a shortfall in this region's ability to be able to meet the needs of large corporations such as Amazon.com. I want to say that, no, we do not provide that. That is, we are meeting folks that have fewer skills. And so we probably want to look to our universities and others. Our population are hardcore unemployed or underemployed individuals.
Hi, I'm a former English teacher, but I did teach Malcolm X and the autobiography of Mountain X and Malcolm X. And through that, I was very moved by his story. And that, as you said, that most people do not know that about him. They remember the fiery rhetoric. Of course, I was old enough to remember that time, but so it would anyway. And but I'm also curious, why did you choose to tell us that story today,
about
Malcolm X?
Because we generally deal with new experiences based on the tip of the iceberg, and if you don't know any more about it, you can't have a full appreciation. I wanted to encourage us all to take a longer and deeper look into the rest of the community.
So is that referring to the people that you work with, or the what
in
we
general,
see?
In general, that's across the board.
In general,
yeah.
Right.
At this point, it's been a few months ago, I was a guest, and it's really interesting. I was filling in for my president and CEO, and I was a guest at the Muslim temple that's on 75. And during that visit, they shared the things that they have to contend with, people's perceptions or misperceptions about who they are and what they do and what certain movements move for. One that comes to mind is one of the Muslim women said that people assume that there's an issue with their
hijab.
Yes. And then went on to make parallels between so many other cultures and religions that are not faced with so much reservation as they were. The other story that was told was the men are in the front and the women are in the back. And so the woman that was sharing the experience said she wouldn't want a man behind her when she bows. And so... And right around it, what I had just witnessed myself was while they were doing the bowing, the guy that was in front of me, his pants was ripped all the way in the back. So I was with her 100%.
Okay, I'm just curious. Thanks.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Betsy Anderson. We work with Valley Interfaith. In fact, one of our members, John Kiefer, is the CEO there. And one of the things they do is they have classes for women and to help them do a lot of what I think you do for your clients, become self-sufficient. And I was wondering if you work with other groups in the community, how much you do like that.
Yes, we do. In fact, the Urban League has the Ohio Women's, what is it? Anyway, it creates business opportunities, procurement opportunities for women-owned businesses. And it represents a probably 30% of our programs and revenue generation. We also, at the Urban League, have an entrepreneurial program to move startup businesses and strengthen them and give them the tools and the budgeting skills and the marketing skills necessary to be successful.
What's your annual budget like?
Our annual budget is $6.2 million. My charge is to raise $2 million of that. And it's a great question. I want to also say that many of the program services that we offer create what we call a shortfall budget-wise. In other words, City of Cincinnati as just an example, that some of the programs that we offer actually cost us more to deliver than what the grant or the funding is that's associated with it. So my charge is to create the money to fill the gap. There are no service charge for any of the program services that we offer.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.